podcast. Welcome, David Ahrens, to our new you podcast episode. I'm here with an old colleague, meeting again in Kingston, Jamaica. David Ahrens is a Jamaican ethnomusicologist who now works at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And I first met David in Ethiopia in, I think it was 2016, when he was conducting research on Ethiopian reggae music. David, maybe you can tell me a little bit about that research project.
All right, well, thank you for having me. Yes, I remember in 2016 meeting you. That was great. So I was in Ethiopia conducting research for my PhD on reggae music in Ethiopia. It was within the framework of repatriation. So the repatriation movement, the Back to Africa movement, so Rastafari, moved to Ethiopia. They believe it's their homeland, their promised land. And I was mostly intrigued by the way that repatriates use reggae music for different reasons, whether to assert their presence in Ethiopia, to maybe integrate with Ethiopians, to demonstrate that they're able to, you know, interact with Ethiopians and create a kind of music that fuses Ethiopian and, you know, Jamaican elements together. For lots of different reasons, I was intrigued by what they were doing and how they were doing it. So I spent some time there playing with different bands, interviewing people, moving around the country, just kind of getting to know like what the reggae scene is. And then the Ethiopians were also creating reggae, like how were they doing it? What was their inspiration? What were they doing differently? So it was just a bunch of questions I was trying to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. And I think it's an approach that not everybody takes, to like really go that far as to play with different bands and get the real experience from playing. And then it's also interesting that you play steel pan and have this background with Trinidadian music.
Yes.
So maybe you can talk a little bit about how that all comes together, your experience of playing steel pan in reggae bands in Ethiopia. And you mentioned also that it was a bit different with the Ethiopian bands and the bands of the repatriates. So maybe you can talk a little bit about the different music experience that you got.
Okay, that's actually, yeah, really important. So I grew up playing the steel pan in Jamaica. I learned in church and I went to Trinidad where I studied steel pan as an undergraduate. So that's my instrument. I know that more than anything else. And a big part of ethnomusicology is in ethnography, participant observation. Can you go and you participate in a music activities with people to see what you can learn through participation? It's just that the steel pan was the only thing I could really play. So I thought maybe I'll just take that and see what happens. I was a bit hesitant because the steel pan isn't typically associated with reggae music. You know, it's more associated with calypso or soca music in Trinidad or other types of Caribbean music. But I just took it, see what would happen. And it actually worked out really well because in a way I stood out. There was one other person there from Trinidad who played steel pan.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in Shashamane. He didn't really go to Addis Ababa too much. So I was able to play in Addis Ababa quite a lot with the steel pan. I wasn't sure if the returnees, the repatriates, would want that steel pan in their band, but they were all really excited. One of them was from Trinidad, Rasquintasub.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually really liked to have the steel pan there. And then another person I played with a lot was Sydney Salmon and the Imperial Majestic Band. And they also really loved the steel pan as well. They realize, you know, they're in a community with other people from different Caribbean countries. And so they realize that not only is the steel pan like a really nice sounding instrument, but it can speak to the other members of their repatriate community. So it wasn't too hard to get in with a band. You know, once I said I had a pan, people were, hey, come to this rehearsal and let's see what happens. And then eventually I was on a stage performing with those bands mostly. And every now and then with an Ethiopian band as well.
So you mostly played with Rasquintasub and Sydney Salmon?
Yes. So
more like in Addis, because there are not so many shows in Shashamane,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So mostly played in Addis. Once or twice in Shashamane for like Haile Selassie's birthday celebration. Mm-hmm. But mostly in Addis.
I think I saw you at the festival where they were like celebrating Bob Marley's birthday.
Oh, yes.
Where they had several bands. And didn't you also play with the Girls Roots band at that time?
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, that was in that big park.
Yes, exactly.
I remember. We came straight from another gig with Rascal Intercept right before that.
Wow.
So we had two in one night. Yes, I remember that one. So that one was Gez Roots. That was mostly Ethiopians, I think.
It had this drummer from Bonaire.
Yes, Janok.
Janok, yeah.
Yes, yeah. He was there. He got me into it. But there were, and Glasses, Isachar, they call it Glasses.
Mm-hmm.
He played percussion. I think he was from Jamaica.
Okay.
And he kind of directed things.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but a lot of the singers were Ethiopian who were like singing with us. And so it was interesting, even like in that rehearsal, you know, watching how Ethiopians interact with Jamaicans.
In one band
and instructions. And sometimes people have to switch to Amharic, go back to Jamaican, trying to get people to get the feel of the music. You know, I remember Glasses like clapping really loud and trying to get people to feel the music, to feel the groove of reggae.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're not used to it, then it's harder to get on. So I was watching all these like tensions being negotiated in like the rehearsal room, which you wouldn't see if you just came to a concert.
Right.
You know? So like those kinds of moments, you're able to like really understand the work that goes into bridging, connecting cultures, connecting different people from different backgrounds. Yeah.
But the bands of Sydney Simon and Russ Quintercept also like mixed in a way that different people come together to play instruments and, you know, sing backing vocals, right?
That's true. No, those bands, they had more people who were regular members. When I was in Girls' Roots, that was only one time I played, and I don't think they were a regular band. They came together. I think they are an established band, or they were an established band, but they hadn't played together in a long time. So most of them had never really played together. So that was a moment where it was with people who just really were coming together for the first time. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Sydney Salmon and Rascal Intercept, they have a kind of a group, and they spend time with each other, they get to know each other. It's not just about music, it's also a mission, a spiritual mission. And they talk about the Bible in rehearsals.
Oh, okay.
They pray together. So mm-hmm. Some bands are a bit, different.
And how would you describe the difference between playing with the different groups? As you said, it was different playing with Ethiopians than playing with the repatriates.
So, I mean, the repatriates have a specific... I keep using the word mission because that's a word that I heard a lot in Ethiopia by repatriates. So repatriates, they would often be prayer. There'd be maybe a Bible reading sometimes. There might be a discussion on Haile Selassie. Like if you're with Rascal Intercept, if we're doing a performance for something related to the coronation of Haile Selassie, he speaks about Haile Selassie. And some of the history of like when Haile Selassie was born, what he did, some of his good, you know, like, so there are lots of like education things happening, reasonings, people talking. And he would encourage the Ethiopians in the band to share their own understanding of some of the history of Haile Selassie. And I'm just gonna say here, it's always tricky for me to talk about this, to make a distinction between like Rastas and Ethiopians or Jamaicans and Ethiopians, because a lot of the repatriates identify as Ethiopians.
Right.
And there are Ethiopians who identify as Rastafari, so it's just a really tricky thing sometimes to talk about. But I think the distinction is important between repatriates and people who, you know, grew up in Ethiopia. But the Ethiopian bands that I sometimes played with the musicians, many times it was about just the performance, in getting the chords right, getting the groove right, getting something else right. There wasn't so much focus on Haile Selassie or something like that. They understood some of it, but that wasn't the focus necessarily. And they did a lot of fusion things as well. Everybody was doing some kind of fusion thing, but you know, the Ethiopians, when they fuse something with Ethiopian stuff, they're used to the Ethiopian thing, so they kind of go into it more seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the repatriates, they really sometimes have to work to bring in Ethiopian elements into their reggae. So I would kind of observe that and see how I felt too, because I would try to fit in on the steel pan. Sometimes successfully, sometimes not really. Mm-hmm. But that's part of the process, you know. It's a work in progress, and everybody's just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. So how did you treat this personal experience of immersing yourself in the fieldwork in your PhD thesis then?
Like what I wrote about it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I wrote about it enough, honestly. It's something I'm trying to think about now as I reflect more on what I felt. Actually, in something that I wrote, well, I guess I did write it in my PhD thesis, but I wrote it for a publication that you were an editor for.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about groove and feel, what it means to feel the music when you're in an environment where people have different backgrounds and
mm-hmm.
we're trying to groove together and feel together. And one of the things that happened was in the Imperial Majestic Band, Sydney Salmon's band, the keyboardist, she's Filipino-American who returned to Ethiopia. And she was able to give so much clear instructions, not just with her mouth, but like with her body language. And so being able to play beside her, watch for her instructions, watch for even how she was moving, told me like what to do next. But then other people said that they didn't always fully understand the instructions. Like Ethiopians might have said that sometimes they didn't understand, but for me, like it worked. So I did write about that a little bit, just to kind of talk about the different ways that you can teach groove. How do you get people to feel music? Because that's part of the challenge with bringing people together in reggae. Reggae is a groove-based music, and you kind of have to feel it in a particular way, and it's hard to explain what you want somebody to do. You have to just kind of feel it. And so I would watch how people try to explain it, but also how people would use their body to explain it. And so I wrote a little bit about that, as how do we think about the challenges of bringing, you know, different cultures together in a rehearsal room when there's a language barrier. And music is there, and yes, people want to say music is a universal language, but the language has to be learned, the vocabulary has to be learned. It's not like automatically a universal, it's not, you know, ethnomusicologists really don't like the term that music is a universal language, because in a case like this, it might look like it's uniting people, but people are still working on vocabulary and still trying to figure out grammar in the musical language. And sometimes it's not quite gelling, so it takes a while for things to happen. And so that's something that I found really fascinating as I was playing in rehearsals and on stage and reflecting the work it takes to bring people together in a rehearsal room and on a stage. Because the more you gel, the more you groove together in a rehearsal room, is the better you're in sync on stage, and then you're performing a kind of unity to the audience. You're showing the audience that different cultures can come together and collaborate and work together. And there's a long history of, you know, black people outside of Africa, the diaspora, working with Ethiopians. So like this is kind of a way for it to happen on a stage. And it's just a lot of work to make it happen. So that's one of the things that I wrote about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And since the steel pan is not a very common instrument in Ethiopia, how did the audience react when you were like on stage and performing in Ethiopia? Did you perceive any of their like reactions to your instrument?
So yeah, I mean, even that is something that helped me to learn so much about about the area, the space I was in. I mean, from I arrived at the airport, Bole Airport, with my steel pan, trying to exit the airport with this round thing, I have to put it through an X-ray machine, and the security was just looking at it, what's this, and I didn't have any Amharic at the time, so I didn't, it's like it's an instrument, music, I don't know. So I had to open it, take out my sticks, and I had to play in the airport to show them. And then they started to call their friends, everybody had to come and see me play. And I just wanted to leave the airport. But just that spectacle of that made me realize that this is gonna be an interesting research period. But the thing is, people were just fascinated by it, because most Ethiopians wouldn't have seen that. So they were very excited. there was once I was playing in Mama's kitchen in Bole. It was like a jam session thing. And somebody came up from the audience and took my sticks and started to try and play. I thought he was joking, but then maybe he was drinking a lot. And they had to get people to come and remove him from the stage because we were all confused. So there were those interesting moments, but mostly fascination. Ethiopians really liked it. And then Ethiopian musicians were interested in having me play with them because they wanted a different sound as well. They wanted to like experience this sound in a band. So it allowed me access to different performance opportunities, which meant access to different musicians. I recorded at Johnny Raga's studio. Yeah, Johnny Raga, he invited me to record in his studio. I don't know whatever happened to that, but I recorded a song on something he was working on.
Oh, wow.
With some other like reggae musicians. And that's incredible. Like, you know, what was good is that I'm able to, because I interviewed him, and this was a way for me to do something that would help whatever his project was. So yeah, I was able to do interesting things like that. And that really helped with the research in many ways, yeah.
Okay, wow. So maybe you can summarize, like in a short way, what was the outcome of your research in Ethiopia?
I think there are multiple outcomes. In a broad sense, I was looking at how reggae musicians participate in the construction of the promised land of Ethiopia. You know, Rastas have been dreaming about Ethiopia for so long and singing about Ethiopia in these kind of utopian terms, imagery for so long, because they were in Jamaica, they didn't really know what it was like. And dreaming of just leaving Jamaica, getting out of this Babylon system, this oppressive kind of system. But Ethiopia presented a kind of a harsh reality for a lot of people. When Haile Selassie was removed from power, the new regime, they nationalized all land, and so you couldn't own land anymore. There were strict guidelines on what you could do with buildings and land. And they didn't recognize the land grant that Haile Selassie gave to black people in the West. So a lot of them were undocumented. They didn't have access to certain things. Their children didn't have access to, like, you know, maybe healthcare or legal counsel in case they needed a lawyer or something like that. So they had a hard time. They couldn't leave Ethiopia to visit and come back. Lots of restrictions. And then Ethiopians didn't really understand what they were doing there. So some Ethiopians might have seen them as a threat. Some Ethiopians might have just been confused, why are you here? And so reggae music is kind of a way that they're able to continue to build up this promised land in different kinds of ways. They're continuing to imagine a future where they can just be in this place that they call home, and they don't have to worry about documentation and all that kind of stuff. Dream of a place where they can interact with Ethiopians more freely. They're able to actually perform this future because they're collaborating with Ethiopians as well. So it's giving kind of a tangible feel of what the promised land is through reggae. And reggae music, you know, brings people together, but it also is a way to negotiate differences. Music doesn't always just bring people together. That's something sometimes and if it does, it's a lot of barriers and obstacles to overcome during that. So I think that's kind of the main thing, how reggae was used to kind of construct this promised land in a kind of concrete terms that they could experience. I don't remember exactly how much what I wrote, because that was a while back. But those are some of the things I was thinking about, yeah.
And since then, you have started to do some new research in Jamaica, right?
Yes.
What is this new research about?
So, it's a bit different, but I grew up in the Anglican Church in Jamaica, and that's where I started to play the steel pan, actually. That's where I learned to play the steel pan. And there are lots of Anglican churches in Jamaica with steel bands. So I'm looking at steel bands in the Anglican Church, but I'm also looking at church music, or music in the Anglican Church in Jamaica since independence, the ways that people are thinking about like decolonization, or what it means to have like national music within the Church of England. I mean, how do you decolonize the Church of England, you know? But these are some conversations that people are trying to have, and music is certainly a part of that. It's a part of the negotiation of what does it mean to be Anglican. The English part is certainly a part of it because that's where it came from, but we're in Jamaica, so what is it, what are we doing? So I've been playing steel pan in a bunch of churches here. That's part of what my research is doing as well, to try and feel what it's like once more, these negotiations and tensions and collaborations and some successes perhaps.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.